You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
And would everybody agree that bias is you have an opinion about something, whether it's based on fact or truth, but you have an opinion about somebody and it may influence your judgment? Would everybody agree that? And I brought my mother up a couple of times, and I'm going to bring her up again. Just a tremendous influence in my life. When I was a very young man, and I'm a, please don't hold this against me, anybody, please, but I'm a transplant to the state of Idaho. I'm not quite born and raised here, but I've got 30 years in, so I think I feel like I've spent enough time in my life that I consider myself a true Idahoan. But I was born in the early part of my life was in the back east. And I lived in a neighborhood. And my mother's very best friend had a very close friend. And they didn't share the same beliefs, faith beliefs. And one day I was sitting there with my mother, and it was a very hot day in the back east. In the back east, it gets incredibly warm. And this person at the time, and my mother was probably 40 years of age, and they were sitting there in the backyard. And I looked over at her best friend, and on her right arm were numbers. And there were about five numbers. And they had been tattooed on. So I asked her, why do you have numbers tattooed? And she said to me, well, I lived in Germany for a little while. And then I stayed at a camp called Auschwitz. And I was surprised because I couldn't understand as a seven-year-old how someone would tattoo someone an arm and put numbers on there. And that was a good lesson for me, because what it showed is that there are people who have feelings so strong that they would engage in that kind of conduct. And I can assure you, you can't count the number of people who have had that done to them anymore, because most of them aren't here anymore. But that had a profound impact on me, and it was the best example of what bias was. And I want to ask you folks, is there anybody here who feels that you should judge somebody just because they may have different beliefs than you do? Please raise your cards. This is important.
No. No. Saying no or saying yes?
If you say no, raise your cards.
Okay.
Unanimous. Thank you. Do all of you understand that it's important not to judge somebody because of their beliefs? Okay. Do all of you know that we all may have different beliefs? That we all may believe some things that are different? Do all of you agree that regardless of how unusual or how unrealistic those beliefs are, we have to respect people for their beliefs? Would everybody agree that? And that we can't judge someone just because they may have unusual or beliefs that we just don't find realistic. Would everybody agree?
Yes.
And would everybody agree that you're not going to judge a person just because they may not form to what you think is normal or average or standard beliefs about various topics? Would that be fair to ask that a few of that?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm going to move on a little bit. Have any of you watched any video, audio, programming regarding this case or anything associated with this case?
No.
Not read any newspapers about it?
Yes, I have.
You have? Would you talk to me a little bit about that?
So, Mr. Pryor, if we're going to go into detail here, I'd like to do that individually.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Judge. Then I'll move on.
And which journal is that?
That was 1242, I think.
Okay.
1424. Forgive me. Now, I'm going to give you an expression. And I want to know if anybody can give me an explanation. And if you can, and you want to, raise your card and I'll ask you individually. I listen to all kinds of music. I try to be open-minded about that, but I love country music. And that was developed because when I moved here, that seems to be a natural, maybe the way we live, at least from my, where I live anyway. And there's a really great song that I love. And when I listen to it, it always moves me a little bit. And the song is from a guy named Dan Seals. I don't think he's alive anymore. But he wrote a wonderful song, and it says, "Everything that glitters is not gold." Is there anybody who doesn't understand what that means? Is there anybody who understands what that means? Raise your cards if you understand what that means. Okay. And I'm going to pick on 1389. So why don't you talk to me a little bit about what you think it means when you say everything that glitters is not gold?
In the physical world, there are a lot of things that can glitter. For example, light striking off a crystal.
Okay.
Glitter off a crystal or a diamond or any other reflective surface. So it stands to reason that it's not going to be gold no matter what.
Okay. Okay. And I'm going to go to 1379 because you've got the biggest, finest smile I've seen for at least 2 or 3 days, and it's refreshing to see someone smile like that. So talk to me, because I think you're thinking about something else.
No, I loved the very definite description he gave. I mean, I was thinking more in not quite such a literal sense, that
okay,
just because you see, just because something is shiny and sparkly doesn't mean it's necessarily valuable,
okay,
or you know, gold-like. So
does anybody look at that? Because the song really goes back to talking about relationships. And some, and juror number 1365, boy, was that a strong nod. And I'm not going to get into your past or your history or whether you've been in the situation where something was glittery and then but it wasn't gold. But you talk to me a little bit about that.
I look at it more, I guess I think of like the perfectly dressed couple and they're in the perfect house and you think, my gosh, they're making, you know, all this money, and then you find out that just because it's on the surface, that deep down inside, it doesn't mean that it's glittering on the outside, but everyone always has issues on the inside somewhere or another.
Right. And sometimes you may be tricked into believing that something is gold when it's just glitter. Or like in our city of Idaho City. And there's us, and we'll go. In fact, I'm going to jump to 1378. Where am I going with this?
All the food schools that's up there.
Right.
Yeah.
And we have a place, a wonderful ski resort called Bogus Basin, right?
Yeah.
And we all try to enjoy that when we can. Getting to the end, I think we've got about another week or two, probably.
Yeah.
But that is where they believe that there was gold up there. So when you evaluate information and look at information, it's important that we really decide, is there really gold here, or is it just glitter? Would everybody agree that we should be doing that?
Yes.
And I'm going to move over to juror number 1392, because you haven't had a lot of reaction, but you had a couple of things. What are your thoughts on this? Everything is glitter, is not gold.
I just take it that you can't judge a book by its cover, basically.
Right. But all of us struggle with that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
All of us have been in situations, whether it's a personal relationship, or whether it's a business relationship, or whether it's any kind of relationship, and we have to gauge somebody. And would everybody agree that we've made mistakes in terms of judging people who we thought may be gold, but reality is they may be glitter? Would everybody agree with that?
Yep.
Okay. And sometimes it's too late, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, we're here today, and you know that you're supposed to, part of your job as jurors, if you're selected, is to evaluate the evidence and make a determination. And with respect to Ms. Blake, she talked about a recipe. But when you're looking at things and trying to make a decision, in the important decisions in your life, is there always a recipe to follow? And that's 1358. And I want you to talk about that.
Very few things have recipes. She mentioned a cooking recipe.
Going right.
Out to be a little more of that, especially if you're baking. But I'm going to count my trick. I have rules I have to follow. I have yet to find a situation that falls with Christmas. Everything is in the gray. So, yes, recipes are black and white, but I do believe there's a lot of gray.
Right, and then I am dumbfounded how we got two accountants next to each other. With all the people here, we have two accountants. Are you folks going to be okay sitting next to each other? I'm trying to be a little, probably not much. But you're right, there's a lot of gray area in major decisions that we make, right? And we just don't check off boxes before we make a major decision about something that's extremely important to us too. Does anybody do that? Raise your hands if you check off boxes and follow a recipe before you make a major decision. None of you. Okay. Do all of you take some time and balance things and look at things before you really make a major decision in your life? Is that what most of you do? Raise your hand if that's what most of you do. All of you do that, apparently. Okay. Now, Ms. Blake also talked about, she talked about the plane situation. And one of the jurors, and I think it was 1392, where are you, 1392? Oh, back there again. I'm going to pick on you again.
All right.
Are you okay with that?
Good.
And I think I'm going to move to 1424 in a minute because he's sitting there very quietly. And we'll get to you in a minute. But 1392, Ms. Blake talked about a plane and that you were going to make a real, think really twice before you get on a plane if you're not sure it's going to land, right? But if you're thinking about whether a plane is going to land or not, it's kind of a guess, right? And another word for guess is a word called speculation. Do you understand what that word means? I try not to use big words because I'm not that bright. Okay, and I try to use simple words and talk very simply because a lot of times, but would everybody agree that a guess and speculation are pretty much the same thing? Raise your hand if that's you believe. Not everybody, oh, looks like it, except for number 12. Oh, you did. Okay, thank you. So when you're making a major decision in your life and you're trying to determine which direction you're going to go, is it a good idea to speculate about things? Ever? Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea to speculate when you're making a major decision in your life. You do? Okay, all right. And again, there's no, thank you, 1251. There's no wrong answer. So talk to me a little bit about when you speculate in making a major decision.
I've had to make major decisions without having all the information.
Okay.
So I'm just thinking through how to go.
Okay. So you've done that. So if you've been given all of the information and you're told this is the information that you have and that you have to make the decision based on all the information that you have and that's the information you have to use to make your decision, do you think it's a good idea to speculate about other things that, well, may affect it or may not affect it, or you make that decision if you've been told you're only allowed to follow what's been provided to you? Is that fair to speculate in that situation? Anybody? If you think yes, please raise your hands. Thank you. I'm going to go into two more areas and then I'm done, I promise, okay? and I'm going to go to 1424 this time. The prosecuting attorney, it was Ms. Blake today, talked about graphic pictures and seeing graphic pictures. And in the context of the media and these folks who, you know, put things out on the media, would you agree with me that sometimes the media portrays images to get a reaction? Does anybody disagree with that? Does everybody agree that the media tries to sensationalize things to try to get you to get a reaction and to think something in a certain way? Is there anybody who disagrees? Raise your hand if you disagree with that. Nobody. So when you're showing these sensationalized pictures, the instinct is to react to them. And the instinct is to feel affected and to move in a certain way to do that, like in the media. Would everybody agree with that? You don't have to raise your cards, just nod your hand if everybody would agree with that. Trying to elicit a reaction. So you're going to see very graphic pictures. And I told the folks yesterday that these pictures are going to hurt your heart. They're going to hurt your heart. And there's no way you're not going to have a reaction to these pictures. It's not possible if you have a heart. But what I'm asking for you folks to do is to look at the pictures and view the evidence, but don't allow it to sensationalize. Take the evidence as it is. But does anybody think it's fair that because these pictures are graphic, that you should automatically presume that Chad is guilty because of these pictures? Does anybody believe that by looking at graphic pictures, you should automatically presume that Chad is guilty? Does anybody believe that?
No.
Okay. And all of you can promise me, if there's anybody who can't, please raise your hand. Please raise your hand. Can all of you agree that when you look at these graphic pictures, that you're not going to immediately presume that Chad is guilty because of these pictures are just so heart-wrenchingly graphic? Could everybody agree with that, please?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. And this is the last topic, and I promise it's the last topic. I want to talk about people and honesty and how you judge honesty. I'd like to see if there's anybody here, and I'm going to put my hand down because I don't apply to this. Is there anybody here who's been honest 100% of the time in their entire life? Raise your hand if you've been honest 100% of the time in your entire life. I'm gonna hold my hand up. I'm sorry, you had a reaction. I'm gonna get to you now. You just prompted somebody back there too. I'm gonna start with 1320 because you had a big smile and I haven't had a chance to talk. We haven't had a chance to talk yet. So what kind of instances do you run into when you find that someone has not been honest? What are the scenarios when you find people are dishonest? Business relationships, have you run into that?
Yes.
Where you're dealing with someone in business and they don't necessarily are honest with you. Personal relationships.
Yes.
Anybody been in personal relationships where people have not been necessarily honest? All of us, maybe most of us. Okay. And we're going to go back to juror number 823 because you had a reaction. I think it was from the gentleman by. Talk to me about your views on honesty.
I think most people try to be as honest as they can be, but sometimes people are a little more dishonest with their feelings or to get away with
Get away with something?
Yes.
Or if they're trying to stop you from finding something out about them. Or if a guy says, I was working late last night, but in fact he was at a tavern with a beautiful young lady having a cocktail, he's not going to admit that, right? And people tend to be dishonest if they're maybe doing something in a personal capacity that they shouldn't be doing. Would you find that people are in that situation would have a tendency not to be honest about everything, to cover it up?
Yes.
Okay, anybody disagree with that? Okay, we're going to go back to 1378 because you're the one who caused 823 to have the reaction. So talk to me a little bit about honesty.
So I recently bought a car, and it was a used car from a dealership.
Okay.
And someone, before they traded in the car, threw out some codes in the system to get a better trade value. Luckily, the dealership was working with me and taking care of those issues. They were not cheap issues. And I just think it's awesome that the dealership's being good to me. But I'm not very grateful. I don't have my car, but I were good loaners, so I'm happy.
But you think that people maybe, or instances, whether it's a business or people, if they're trying to protect something, and it could be something very simple, they'll be dishonest, right?
Yeah.
We talk about people who have financial hardships. Juror number 1365. The couple shows up with the fancy suits and the sports cars and all the big house and all the other stuff. And then we find out that they don't have a, better watch my expression, right? They don't have a you-know-what to you-know-what in. And that's, in a sense, is dishonesty as well, right? But that's a simple thing. They don't want to be embarrassed, or they don't want someone to find out about it, so they may not be truthful about situations. And that may be a small white lie, maybe a big white lie, but it's because sometimes they're embarrassed about it, right? And that's why people lie as well. And then I'm going to go to 1379, because you keep smiling again, and you're catching my attention with that smile. So I think, please don't stop. So let's talk a little bit about honesty and then what your thoughts are on that.
Well, it's a big topic. I think I agree with what's been said, though. I think most people do tend to try to be honest, but there are situations where maybe, you know, fudging the truth, I think there's very similar feelings or that type of thing. So
not being discovered about something they may be doing that they shouldn't be doing.
Right. Or, you know, clearing codes so they get that deal. You know, maybe they're motivated by that. But I think generally people are motivated to be honest.
Okay. And lastly, I just want to thank, I understand how difficult all of this is. And I understand how hard it is to sit there and have me pick you out and answer questions. I really appreciate it. I hope you understand the magnitude of how important it is that I be given this opportunity. And the folks here, the prosecuting attorneys, are given the board at the same time in the court, because we need to be able to talk to you folks to get your feelings on a variety of subjects. So once again, thank you for bearing with me, and thank you for your time.
All right, that will conclude the defense for Dyer at this time. We're going to move on to some individual for Dyer with this group of jurors. This will be a logical point to take a mid-morning break. So we'll allow the jurors to be excused, and then we'll take a break for about 20 minutes or so, come back in with our first juror for individual for Dyer questioning. I'll please rise for the jurors. All right, we'll take a break and return. Thank you. Please be seated.
Judge, before you bring in the jury panel, the state was going to see if we may approach.
You may. Sidebar here with the okay. Let's go back on the record then. CR 2221-1623. We are going to now conduct individual for Dyer of this remaining panel of jurors, and we'll be starting with juror 823. So if we could please have the marshals have that juror brought in. While we're doing that, I will note on the record that the defense is present, as well as the defendant and the prosecution as well. All right, thank you, juror 823, for returning this morning. We've got some additional questions on individual voir dire, and I'm just taking a moment to review the questionnaire again. One thing I'd like to just bring up, because our schedule is set and everything's important here, I did note that I think you didn't appear when you were supposed to, but you did appear today, so we're happy you're here. And not to necessarily call you out on the spot, but I do think it's important we have jurors that are able to follow the schedule and be here dependably. And I would like to know if there was some explanation as to why you weren't able to appear when summoned. Was there some confusion there? Did something happen preventing you from appearing before?
No, Your Honor, no confusion. It was just a honest mistake. I used my phone as my alarm clock, and it came unplugged or something. And regardless, my phone died overnight. Woke up already too late.
Okay, I understand. We had a couple of failed to appears, and I guess just a bit of a follow-up on that. You generally consider yourself to be dependable enough that if you move forward in this, you'd be able to make it here when you're supposed to each day?
Yes, very. I'm in the military, and we're on time.
Okay, that's all I needed to follow up on that. I just wanted to make sure we had some answer there. The other issues we would look at this time is whether or not there was any kind of a hardship or bias issue. And with this particular juror, I didn't see anything of concern as it relates to bias and getting no knowledge of the case, nor of hardship. So I don't have any follow-up question on either of those areas. Does the state have any follow-up order for the juror on hardship or bias?
We do not, Your Honor.
Nothing from the defense.
Okay. So there's one other topic we'll talk to you about individually, then juror number 823. In your questionnaire, you filled out and completed a section on your attitudes regarding the death penalty. And that is in your questionnaire starting on page 12. Do you recall when you filled out your questionnaire thinking through those questions and answering those?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Are the responses you made still your feelings about the death penalty now that some time's passed since you filled that out?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I'll advise you that in this case, it might be necessary for you to make that determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. And as you're thinking about that, consider that that's not a hypothetical because this is the case before us. So you have to consider that as if any punishment you consider would be absolute and carried out in the case. So as you think about that, I'll go through your questionnaire responses, a few of those. And on the first one I'll address with you, the question is, do you support or oppose the death penalty? And you said you support the death penalty. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. The next question I'll look at was on the following page. You were given a series of choices about what would most accurately represent the way you feel, and you picked choice C, which reads, I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Do you recall selecting that answer?
Yes.
And does that describe your feelings about the death penalty?
Yes.
Okay. I just have one more question for you then. Do you believe, or is it your personal belief, that you would always be in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder's been committed?
In every case, not necessarily, no.
All right. Thank you for your responses to those court's questions. Does the state have any questions on voir dire relating to the death penalty?
We do not, Your Honor.
Does the defense have any questions?
Just a couple. Certainly, this is probably
Mr. Pryor.
Oh, Mike.
Oh, my goodness. You said in every case, no. Can you give me some insight into is there a line there where you say, you know, this is an absolute for the death penalty, or this is not an absolute? Is there some sort of black line that you draw, or can you elaborate on that for me a little bit?
Well, it's, you know, every case is different, obviously. Different circumstances, such as, right, it's not specified whether it's, you know, an intentional murder or like an accident or, you know, just all sorts of different things could be, you'd have to weigh in on, I think.
Okay. So if it's an intentional murder and there are children involved, is that an automatic death penalty?
No.
Okay. When you looked at the list and then you had the options from A through F, A being, you know what? Murder, it's death penalty. And if you could refer to that, I think it's page, bottom of page 13. Let me know when you're there, please.
I'm there.
Okay. So when you read that, was there any hesitation to choose between C and D? If there was and I'll ask you to answer that first.
Not really, no.
Okay. If there was one that said neutral, that I'm going to make up my mind based on each and every one individually and not just rubber stamp yes or no on the death penalty, would that be closer to your beliefs?
Yes.
So if there was a neutral choice where you would say, listen, I've got to hear everything, and then there's just no criteria for like a recipe, let's put it that way, that quite frankly, you have to look at the facts, and it's not just because there are kids or not just because it was intentional. You have to look at the whole story to determine whether or not that's where you're going to go. Would that be fair?
I'd say yes. Yeah.
Okay. And sir, thank you for your time. Judge, that's it.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Juror 823, then that will conclude the individual voir dire for you. You'll go ahead and return to the jury room, and we'll have further instructions for you here after we've talked to the other jurors.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next juror we'll have brought in, please, 1204. All right, juror 1204, welcome back. Thank you for returning for individual voir dire. At this stage, we're going to have a few questions, beginning with questions about bias. We've already talked, I think, probably sufficiently about the fact that this juror also has a vacation partially paid for or paid for. They don't want to miss starting June 15th, but I think we're through that issue. So, counsel, there is some indication this juror has previous knowledge of the case, and I'd like to have any questioning counsel requests relating to potential bias from media exposure. So I'll start with the state asking any questions and then allow the defense to voir dire individually this juror.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, sir. I just wanted to briefly discuss with you the media attention in this case. And you indicated in your questionnaire that you had heard a little bit about this case from Basic News. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that you had heard from the news that Mr. Daybell was involved and that he would be going to trial at some point.
Correct.
During this trial, you're going to be instructed that Mr. Daybell is innocent until the state meets its burden of proof, and that is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And that means that as Mr. Daybell sits here today, he's innocent. Do you understand that?
I do.
Do you understand that nothing that you've heard on the news is evidence? Now, when you learned on the news that there would be a trial at some point, did that lead you to form any conclusions about his guilt?
No.
Okay. And you indicated on your questionnaire that you had not formed an opinion on this case. Is that still accurate?
That's correct.
And you also indicated on your questionnaire that you would be able to put out of your mind what you have read or heard about this case and render an impartial verdict.
Correct.
Is that still accurate?
Yes.
Thank you very much, sir. I have no additional questions for this jury, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Beatty. Mr. Pryor for the defense.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Which I have nothing as far as hardship.
Okay. All right, Mr. Pryor, could I get you to repeat that again with the microphone? We didn't catch it on our audio.
Judge, I have nothing on hardship and bias on this.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pryor. The next section we'll look at then is, in your questionnaire, juror number 1204, do you recall reading through and filling out questions relating to your attitude regarding the death penalty?
Do.
All right. And are the responses you made in the questionnaire still the way you feel about that as you sit here today?
Yeah.
All right. You indicated when given the option of support or oppose, question, do you support or oppose the death penalty? You said support. Is that correct?
That's correct.
In addition, there was a section that gave you some pre-written responses to choose from, and it's which one most accurately represents the way you feel. You circled in the questionnaire what's labeled as 6C, and that reads, I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Is that still the way you feel about the death penalty today?
It is.
Okay. Another question then. You are in favor of the death penalty. Do you believe that the death penalty should be imposed in every case where a murder has been committed?
That's that, no.
Okay. Is there anything about your views on the death penalty that you think would either substantially impair or prevent you from following the court's instructions about the death penalty, whether that was to consider it or to not consider it in this case? Okay, thank you for your responses. I'll let the state continue with voir dire.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sir, you indicated on your questionnaire that you believe that the death penalty has its time and place and that it is not to be taken lightly. Is that how you feel still, as you said for today? And so you would be able to consider the state's presentation and anything presented by the defense during the death penalty phase and give that fair consideration before you make up your mind whether or not the death penalty is appropriate if the case should proceed to that point. Is that correct? Thank you, sir. I have no additional questions for this jury, Your Honor.
All right, thank you for the defense.
Juror number 1204, could I have you turn to page 13 of your questionnaire? Now, at the bottom of page 13, you circled number C.
Correct.
All right. At the time that you were reading that, would you take a look at number D? Let me know when you're done. Just number D.
Okay.
Okay. If there was a choice between number C and number D, and I will tell you that when I read that, the difference between C and D is C says I favor, D says I oppose, but both folks would look at the evidence and make a determination on the facts. Do you agree with that?
Correct.
If there was a choice that said neutral, and that I'm not going to make up my mind until I've had a chance to look at all the facts and not just prejudge it, evaluate the facts and circumstances, not one way or not the other way, and then make a decision, could that represent your position?
It could. Okay. I would say I might lean more towards neutral, but I do still support the death penalty.
Okay. Circumstances. Well, in certain circumstances, and if the judge gives you instructions and says, listen, in the event we get to a sentencing phase, there are options that you have, and the two options are death penalty or life in prison. You will, before you make a decision, you'll look at all the facts and circumstances and remain neutral until you decide which one fits the facts and circumstances. Would that be fair?
Yes.
All right, Judge, I have nothing else. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, juror number 1204. Then that will conclude your individual voir dire. We'll have you return to the jury room with the bailiff, and you'll receive further instructions once we've talked to other jurors today. Next, talk to juror number 1251. 1251. All right. Thank you for returning, juror number 1251. Court is going to allow for some individual voir dire at this time. We've got a little bit of case knowledge, not much, and there wasn't anything in the way of hardship. If the state would like to inquire as to any potential bias, I'll allow that as well as the defense, and then we'll move on to our next topic after that.
Thank you, Your Honor. Juror 1251, just a reminder, there's no right or wrong answers. I just want you to tell us how you feel. So it sounds like you don't know much about Chad Daybell. Is that accurate?
Yes.
So you haven't followed this case in the news at all?
No.
There is one thing on your questionnaire. You say you don't have a hardship. You do say, I wish I could say yes. Tell me about that. Like, why did you write that on your questionnaire?
I think anytime you're involved in a difficult case like this, that takes a lot of time and emotional energy. And just for me, I try not to even involve myself in dramas or news or things like that. And as I was thinking about that question, I realized that because of all those things, it probably makes me a good candidate. But I just want to be honest about my exposure and hardships and all of those things. And it's like, you can make things up, but if I don't have anything, then it's like, there's no reason why I shouldn't be serving this duty.
You just used the word energy, and in your questionnaire, you said, I have 0% energy for this process. Can you elaborate on that? And maybe you've already kind of answered that in what you just said. We just want to make sure we understand how you're feeling. So when you say you have no energy for this process, what does that mean to you in terms of actually serving on a jury in a case like this?
It's more connected to people who watch news and are into sensationalized things or just not really focusing on their own lives. And so they insert themselves in all sorts of stories and spend a lot of their time, I guess, reading these headlines. And I just don't do that. I don't live my life that way. That's why I don't watch the news. That's why I don't read articles in the morning. So, I'm a new patient, so it's like I see when, let's say, trying to get my attention or trying to get me to think certain ways. So that's why I just choose to not involve myself in others.
And to be fair, yeah, when you said the 0% energy, that was for the media. And so, but going back to this idea that on page 19 of your questionnaire, I wanted to ask if you can put anything you have heard out of your mind, you say yes. But then you say, but do I want to be involved? No, I do not. Does that mean you don't want to be on this jury?
I was being prosecuted. I would want an unbiased jury. And as someone who doesn't know anything about this, that's where it's like, I would hope that there would be people stepping up if I was in this situation, just to hear both sides of what was going on.
So even with what you wrote, can you commit to, if you are put on this jury, that you will fully engage in that process of weighing the evidence, listening to witnesses?
Yes.
You did have one other thing that I would need to check in with my work days on the trial schedule. Have you done that? Do you know if this trial schedule you'd be able to accommodate your work with this trial schedule?
I'm good. Sure.
I have no further questions at this time.
Okay. On that topic then of the potential hardship or bias, Mr. Pryor, you can inquire.
Ma'am, the reason I asked initially and we made eye contact initially is there anybody who doesn't want to be here? That's what I took from your questionnaire. But after you explained, I applaud your honesty, straightforward answers. If I'm understanding what you're saying, listen, I don't have time for gossip. I don't have time for all of this sensationalized, and I'm going to look at this thing in a fair and balanced, neutral way. Is that fair?
Yes, and I would just say that it's more about you wanting to be here in a way that's kind of sick. So it's like, I don't know that any of us really want to be here, but are we here? And are we answering questions honestly? And yes.
And you could find that there are people that just don't work. You could understand why I would ask that. Because there are people that are just saying, you know, we run across this all the time. They make comments about and make up things to avoid having jury duty. There are people that do that. And what I'd rather do is just say, you know, folks, just tell me the truth and just tell me you don't want to do it. Because if you don't want to do it, there's no sense putting anybody who doesn't want to do it on a jury for it, considering it's going to be 8 or 10 weeks. But I applaud the fact that you say, listen, I don't necessarily want to be involved, but I will do what I'm instructed to do, and I will follow the rules and listen to the court and do all the things that are expected of me. Is that fair?
Yes, I trust that by answering honestly and letting the chips fall, that that's what is supposed to happen. And I can secure my integrity, but I wasn't trying to get out of something just because of my own uncomfortableness. But
you weren't trying to skirt your responsibility, and you're being forthright about things, right?
Correct.
I want to thank you for that, Judge.
All right, thank you. All right, Juror 1251, there's another topic we're going to discuss here individually with you, and that relates to the questionnaire and your responses on your attitudes regarding the death penalty. Do you recall reading through that section of the questionnaire and answering those questions?
I do.
And are the responses you gave in the questionnaire still accurate in terms of the way you would feel about it today?
Yes.
Okay. You indicated when given a choice of whether or not you support or oppose the death penalty, you check the box that said you support it. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And I will advise you in this case that it may actually be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. And when we're discussing this, you need to consider this as not a hypothetical, but that it may be required to be considered in this case, and it may be absolute and carried out in the case. So with that in your mind, you said you support it. Also, in a response when you had choices on this section six, there were like seven different choices. You selected choice D and said, I am generally opposed to the death penalty, but I believe I can put aside my feelings against the death penalty and impose it if it is called for by the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Do you recall answering that?
Yes.
And does that generally represent the way you do feel about the death penalty?
Yes.
Okay, so in the one instance when just a yes or no, you said you support, then later you say you're generally opposed but would follow the facts, law, and instructions. So is there anything you want to clarify there, or are you just kind of in the middle on that issue?
I would just hope that the death penalty is reserved for extreme case.
Okay, so you are not of the view that it should be considered in any murder case. You wouldn't believe that.
Can you repeat that, please?
So the question is, do you believe that the death penalty should be considered or imposed in any case where a murder's been committed?
No.
All right. Is there anything about your views at all on the death penalty that you think could prevent or impair your ability to follow court's instructions if you had to consider that in this case?
No.
Okay, that concludes the court's inquiry. Would the state like to inquire?
Just briefly. Juror 1251, so as I read your questionnaire and listening to your answers, just to make sure I completely understand where you're coming from, it sounds like you believe there are times when it is necessary, the death penalty.
Yes.
And, but you are willing to, if the court is to give you instructions, if this becomes an option, you will follow those instructions in the law and make sure it's applied appropriately.
Yes.
I have another question, Chair.
Affirmative defense.
No questions, Chair.
All right. Thank you, Juror 1251. We'll go ahead and have you return to the jury room with the bailiff and maybe some additional instructions once we talk to the other jurors. We'll next talk to Juror 1320.
You can be seated.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, juror number 1320 has returned for some individual voir dire. We're doing this with all the jurors, so they'll be concerned that you're here alone. There's some question in the review of the questionnaire about some knowledge of the case, as well as you did explain potentially a hardship here. Maybe I'll just address that with you and then allow the state and the defense to question on hardship or bias. On the trial length, where you were told that in the questionnaire and also it was reiterated here, you said you did check the box, yes, you'd have a hardship. You said, I have a job and a life to live, but I'll serve if selected. So with that, could you explain a little more what impact that may have if, in fact, you are serving for a 10-week period?
Okay, yeah, I looked into it since then. The work will give me 2 weeks pay or 10 days. And then I'd have to take my time off and have about a month of that. So be 6 weeks of pay and 4 weeks of no pay, I guess, as I would come out. Which I found. It's not like I'd be living on the street after that, but, you know, it would be
okay.
Money I wouldn't get.
I appreciate you doing the follow-up, looking into that with your employer also. If, in fact, this extended out, you said you are willing to serve, very much appreciate that, and you still feel that way, even considering that it could go beyond that six-week time frame and cause some financial strain.
Yeah, I'm not living from paycheck to paycheck, and so, yeah, it wouldn't be fun, but,
okay,
I guess.
Well, thanks for your responses on that. On the bias, I didn't have any specific questions. The state can conduct voir dire on either topic, and then I'll allow the defense.
Morning, sir.
Yes.
So to follow up where the court just left off, I think I followed you that you'll get a couple of weeks' pay, you've got some time off, it's probably paid time off, you can apply. About a month.
Right.
That if this goes 10 weeks, you won't get paid?
Yeah, for the last few months.
Do you feel like there's anything about that during that last month? If you were chosen as a juror, it probably wouldn't be uncommon for jurors or lawyers or judges after 8 or 10 weeks to be tired of the case. Do you feel like during that last month where you're not getting paid, did that cause any resentment? Did that cause you to be distracted at all in terms of listening to evidence or resentful that you're still there?
No, not necessarily. My wife has a part-time job, so it's, like I said, it's not like we'd be going hungry or living on the street, but maybe my 401k wouldn't get as built up as I want it to be. Maybe I won't buy that new video game or something.
All right, fair enough. Excuse me. And then just a couple of questions from some comments you made about the press coverage. You made a comment on page 415 of the questionnaire that it asked, if you did follow these cases, has that caused you to already form an opinion regarding the guilt or innocence of Chad Kindeville on the case? And you said no. But the media reports is not necessarily the truth of facts.
Yeah.
You still stand behind that?
Yeah, yeah. They're there to sell newspapers or screen time. They're reporting on what they get noticed, not necessarily what is the truth.
So is it fair to say, though, that you have heard some things about the case?
Yes.
Okay. Anything about what you have heard that has caused you to form any specific opinions about the case or about Mr. Dayville?
No, not really. I mean, when it first came out, I read about it, and you know, it was interesting and so forth, but I didn't make an opinion on it because it's, you know, I know it's not the whole truth there. So
as you sit there, you feel like you could hear the facts and deliberate and be objective about everything?
Yes, I do.
Your Honor, on bias and hardship, the state has no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Royce.
No questions from the defense, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Juror 1320, then we'll move on to one final topic with you in relation to the part of your questionnaire you completed called Attitudes Regarding the Death Penalty. Do you recall reading through that section in the questionnaire and answering it?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. And if you would like to reference it, it's page 12. And 13.
Yeah.
So considering those responses you made last week, are those still true and accurate in the way you feel today?
Yes. Yes, I believe so.
Okay. I will advise you in this case, it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty in this case. So remember, this does apply to the case, and any penalty you're considering should be considered as if it is absolute and will be carried out in the case. So with that in mind, there was a box checked by you on the question, do you support or oppose the death penalty? Check the box saying you support it. Is that the way you feel?
Yeah, I think in some cases it's warranted by the law. If that's what the law says, then that's what should be done.
Okay. On the next page, there were some more detailed choices you had there out of 7, and this was the questionnaire's words, not your own, but you selected a choice you thought most accurately reflects the way you feel. You checked a box that said, I am generally opposed to the death penalty, but I believe I can put aside my feelings against the death penalty and impose it if it is called for by the facts, law, and instructions in the case.
Kind of contradictory, wasn't I?
And that's fine. If you'd like to explain any more about your thoughts on it, this would be the time. And I don't know that necessarily is contradictory, but do you have any explanation on that choice?
No, it's just that, you know, no one should have to die, but if the law, if the case says and the law states that that's what to be done and that's the punishment, then that's what should be done.
So you don't feel then, as I gather, that the death penalty should be in place or considered in every case where a murder's been committed?
Not unless it's asked for by the prosecution or the facts deem that it's advisable by the law or whatever.
Okay. So one final question then, is there anything about your personal views or thoughts or feelings on the death penalty that you think would prevent or impair you from following the court's instructions on that if you served as a juror in this case?
No, I don't believe there is.
Okay, thank you for your responses. Let's have the state, if there's any follow-up or dire on that topic.
Thank you, we do, Judge. Sir, probably just a couple of questions. So on page 12 of your questionnaire, on the bottom, you had answered in a question, do you feel the death penalty is used too often? X that box.
Uh-huh.
Then you explained so much more costly to pursue the life in prison without parole.
Uh-huh.
Surely not an uncommon opinion. As you consider that there, first of all, is that an accurate expression of how you feel about it?
Well, as far as do you feel the death penalty is used too often, too seldom? I don't know. I don't know is the right answer. I don't know. Seems like there's not a good choice there at all. But, I've heard that it's more costly to pursue a death penalty.
But fair enough. And then there's no wrong answers here. Where you're coming from.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, if the case does proceed, if there's a conviction and then we get into a death penalty question, the judge will give you certain instructions as to how to evaluate the death penalty, whether it should apply.
Mm-hmm.
Will the fact that you think and believe that it's more expensive to society to use the death penalty than just life in prison, will that be anything that would dissuade you from otherwise following the instructions that the judge gives in terms of how you apply the facts and law? Will that still be a factor in the back of your mind?
No, because all the people, the prosecution, the judge, and everyone has weighed out those facts and those, the cost of it and so forth. And if they believe that it's viable, then, and I'm given those instructions to figure that out, then do what the judge would ask.
Okay. So if it's fair to say that you won't let that cost factor be part of your decision, is that fair?
Yes, that's fair. That's correct.
No, I don't have any more questions.
All right. Any questions for Vordire on that issue?
Just to follow up, my concern.
Yes.
You made a comment that if the prosecution asks for the death penalty,
mm-hmm.
I take things sometimes literally. And in that situation, I was wondering, does that mean that if the prosecutor, and I don't want to imply under any circumstances that Chad is going to get convicted, but if that happened and the prosecutor asks for the death penalty, does that mean you're absolutely going to follow the prosecutor's recommendation and impose the death penalty?
No, I would follow the judge's advice and take the prosecution's arguments into fact and your arguments into fact.
So if the court were to instruct you that upon a conviction, you have a choice between the death penalty
mm-hmm.
and life in prison, you would equally balance those considerations based on the facts and circumstances surrounding the case. Would that be fair?
If that was what the judge dictated and those are the choices, yes, I would balance those out fairly.
Okay. And at this point, based on what I understand, is that despite those choices, it's still your, and I don't want to use the word preference, you oppose the death penalty, but you're going to be fair. And you're going to look at both of the options before you make a decision based on your understanding of the facts, based on what the prosecutor tells you, based on what the defense tells you, and based on what this judge instructs you or the rules to follow. Would that be fair?
I'd like to think that's where I stand, yes.
Okay, is there any reason to suggest that you wouldn't stand anywhere else?
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.